In 2008, the government of Tanzania launched prosecutions on two former Bank of Tanzania officials. The prosecutions were for corruption-related charges stemming from the construction of the Bank of Tanzania Towers, also known as the Twin Towers, located in Dar es Salaam. The charges covered activity from 2001 to 2006, and it is estimated that corruption cost the government $153 million, as the initial budget for the project nearly tripled over the course of construction. In 2002, Max was working for Coastal Steel Industry, also known as CSI. He was employed in their construction division as a building economist. One of his first jobs was to help supervise CSI's role in constructing the Twin Towers. This gave him access to the finances of the project, and he soon realized how bad the corruption was and how much it was costing the Tanzanian people. But this wasn't the biggest problem. Max took this information to the media. He tried to get radio stations to pick it up. He tried to get newspapers to run it, but everyone declined. The outlets told him no one would believe the scandal, but also claimed that they could possibly get banned for running the story. This was a turning point for Max. He realized that to combat corruption in Tanzania, a new and more inventive approach must be taken. He looked to the internet as an opportunity, and that started him on this journey. A journey that includes the uncovering of at least 30 corruption scandals, saving the country millions of dollars and getting corrupt officials thrown out of office and sometimes in jail. But there have also been threats, arrests, abductions, and interrogations. So as Max continues exposing public corruption, he has also emerged as an international leader in the fight against online censorship. This is Whistleblower, the story of Maxence Mello and Jomny Forums.
Maxence Mello, he's the founder of Jomny Forums, a website for whistleblowers.
I think the first thing I thought was like, this man is brave, right?
Those people who used to be with you, once they're in power, they wanted to also push you back.
Tanzania's president, John Magufuli, has a zero-tolerance policy for any criticism of him or his government.
We started getting letters from authorities demanding for user data for our platform. So in 2008, in February, I got arrested and I was alleged to be a terrorist.
What is happening now is freedom of speech is being criminalized.
There are things that probably as humans we can't control. And there are things that we can control. But policing the internet, I don't think it's a good thing. It's not at all. That's the ultimate freedom that we have. And I think it's something to cherish.
Thank you to everyone for tuning in. If you haven't listened to episode 1 already, I would really encourage you to do so. It's pretty short, and in it, I lay out a general overview of what we're talking about here and why I think it's important. But I'll also just put in a quick overview right here. So this podcast centers around a man named Maxence Mello and his website, Jomny Forums. Jomny Forums is a major social media website in Tanzania and has had a hand in exposing numerous corruption scandals. But because of this, Max has recently been targeted by the government as they attempt to silence him and limit the impact that Jomny Forums can have. In this episode, we'll be going through the main story, the events that brought Jomny Forums into its current state and led Max into his current role as a free speech and anti-corruption leader. Max was born in northwest Tanzania in the Kagera region. The region is right on Lake Victoria and also pushes up against Tanzania's borders with Rwanda to the west and Uganda to the north. It's a beautiful area with lots of wildlife, and it's a pretty good distance from the country's urban centers of Dodoma and Dar es Salaam. Now, Max grew up an orphan and he lived in one of the local orphanages. And Max had a pretty standard education growing up. He attended primary school in the region and attended secondary school thanks to a sponsorship from Partage Tanzania. Now that's an independent charity that supports children in the rural areas around Lake Victoria, and they actually helped run Max's orphanage. Now unfortunately, The funding ran out after his secondary education, and this left Max in a tough spot, but he still found a way to continue his studies.
After my secondary education, there was no more funding from Bataj Tanzania. I did well in my secondary education. I was supposed to go for the higher education. I went through a lot of trouble to make sure that I get funding for my higher education because there was no support from the government back then. And I managed to get to the Dar es Salaam Institute of Technology. That's when I did my bachelor degree on civil engineering. But before I went there, I tried to make sure that I get people who could help me for my higher education. I met the former president of Tanzania's wife, the first lady. Back then she was called Mrs. Anna Mkapa. There was a foundation under the first lady's office. And she said she couldn't talk to beggars. So I tried as much as I could, but I couldn't get support from her office. That was 1999. So at the end of the day, I got assistance from someone who could help to, for my the first installment to get to the Ministry of Technology. And I managed to pursue my degree at the Dar es Salaam Institute of Technology, and I finished my college degree in 2002.
At the Dar es Salaam Institute of Technology, Max completed his practical training with a company called Coastal Steel Industry. And then upon graduating in 2002, he began working with them. As I mentioned before, this, which was Max's first job out of college, is what exposed him to how deep both the corruption and the suppression ran in Tanzania.
Since 2002, when I finished my college degree, that's when I started working for this company, but I was employed as a building economist. I was given several tasks, and among those tasks I worked was to make sure that I supervised the construction of the Twin Towers in Tanzania, the Central Bank of Tanzania, and several banks in Tanzania, including the National Bank of Commerce, the NBC, countrywide. Mm-hmm. And that's when I could get access to several documents, and among them was the Central Bank of Tanzania's scandal of around 133 billion shillings.
And what Max saw working on the Bank of Tanzania Tower project was that politicians were trying to fund their campaigns for the upcoming election.
There was a lot of corruption which was happening because they were looking for monies to fund the election 2005. And as long as I would be building economists, some of the stuff that I saw is like, there is a, it may feel like it's a petty corruption, but it's real.
And the petty corruption that Max mentioned works like this. A construction company would price a project at a reasonable price. So let's say $30 for a square meter of material. The government official would say, okay, we'll give you this contract if you list the price higher, say $100 per square meter. The contractor would get their $30 and then the government official would take the remaining $70. And as I mentioned before, this type of corruption helped balloon the cost of the Twin Tower project to almost three times the original estimate. In Max, after seeing this happen time and time again, confronted one of the individuals taking money.
Approached him and they said, I think this is not good for the citizens of Tanzania. For someone who has been raised as an orphan like me, who had no money, who had no access to finance.
When that didn't work, he talked to someone he knew at the central bank in order to collect documents necessary to prove what was happening.
When I got someone from the central bank, a whistleblower, who knew me and shared this kind of information, so he had to give me a matrix on where the money goes, who gets the money, and how they use the money, and where they are they being taken. And I felt like after having this kind of documents, now we can go to the media. And it didn't work.
And what Max meant by it didn't work was that no traditional media outlet, no newspaper, no radio station would run the story.
And we try to whistleblow that kind of corruption scandal to the traditional media, it wouldn't go public. Whenever we tried to send to papers, it wasn't easy as I thought it could be. And among the challenges that I went through personally, it was that kind of scandal, not being able to put that onto a paper, because all papers were like, no, we can't publish this.
You're talking about the newspaper, so you went to the newspapers and they...
Yes, the newspapers in Tanzania. Okay. We went to the radio. There was two radios in Tanzania back then. We tried to approach. They couldn't publish that kind of discussion. They said, one, no one will believe it, and two, they might get banned. So the only way was getting this kind of information online. So because we had this kind of radio and newspaper thinking, we started with an online radio called the Jambo Radio.
So as you heard, the inability to get the corruption exposed through traditional media is what pushed Max to create an online resource, Jambo Radio. Jambo is spelled J-A-M-B-O. And it closely translates to hello in English. But the radio station had a tough time attracting listeners.
So, because we had this kind of radio and newspaper thinking, we started with an online radio called the Jambo Radio.
Okay.
And we could hardly get maximum of 50 people online. And because we couldn't start by whistleblowing stuff, we started by playing music online, but it wasn't enough to convince people. And then we thought of having an online chat, which we called the Jambo Chat. That was 2003. And again, it didn't gain too much attention from the citizens.
So Jambo kicked off in 2003. But as Max said, it also had a tough time attracting users. The internet wasn't quite yet booming in Africa or even America at this point, and this made it difficult for people to access the content. However, Jambo Chat did make some big strides. First, they got some politicians involved. These politicians would sign up as users on Jambo Chat and engage with everyday people who were voicing concerns.
And there were a few political figures in the platform on the chat, so people wanted to meet those political figures, one, ask them questions, and then they are responding timely.
Additionally, Max realized the importance of anonymity. He saw that people were more willing to whistleblow on corruption and voice their grievances when they were able to remain anonymous. With these encouraging developments, Max pushed forward. They tried merging the radio station with the chat room, but soon realized that the biggest problem was actually the inability to save and revisit conversations. So think back, for those of you who used the internet in the early 2000s, to how chat rooms worked. You would enter a chat room, you would talk with a bunch of people maybe about a particular subject that room was focused on. But then when you logged off, the chat was gone. If you wanted to come back the next day and continue discussing, none of your content from the previous day would be there.
Chat rooms were, Java-based. So once you close the browser, the next day you can't recall what was the discussion yesterday if you were not part of that kind of discussion. So we wanted to have a backup so that, of course, we started discussing some of the corruption scandals, but we couldn't keep records. So we wanted to have a way that could be easy.
The solution to that is a forum. In 2006, Jambo Forums was launched. Now, Max and Mike Mushi were actually ready to launch Jambo Forums in 2005. However, there was an election that year, and there were concerns that launching a website aimed at combating corruption right before an election would give them a political reputation that they didn't want.
Some of the guys who were part of the movement were kind of political affiliated, and they felt like once we start such a platform, they might link it to politics. So they should not look like we are politicians. We are people who want to see our taxes being used according to the law, and we are the good guys. So if they link us with any political party, it might be a bad thing, and then we might end up being labeled like a group of terrorists.
So they pushed the launch date back until after the election. And when they did launch in 2006, there was a lot of excitement around the concept, and there was a lot of support for it.
It was good because before we started, we held a meeting. There were several people, including the youth that they held the first meeting. And we had several politicians. We had several religious leaders and several academicians. And then we agreed that we need to have such a platform.
Jambo Forums was set to give Tanzanians something they had never had before, an outlet, a way to voice their concerns in a forum to tell people what was going on, what they were seeing, without fear of punishment from the government. And that's because the internet allowed users, the contributors, and even Max to remain anonymous.
We wanted people to be anonymous. People wanted to be anonymous in order to whistleblow. And when we started Jambo Forums, we started using anonymous names, including me in a way.
The results were probably wilder than anyone could have imagined. Jambo Forums broke major corruption stories almost immediately. The first is known as the central bank scandal. It was exposed in 2007 and involved the siphoning of around $70 million that was intended for external debts to 20 different national and foreign private enterprises that were run by prominent businessmen and government officials. It led to the dismissal of Daudi Balali, the central bank governor, in 2008. Now, Balali fled to the United States but died only 5 months later. And overall, the scandal has resulted in more than 20 different criminal cases against government officials and businessmen. And it all started with members of parliament bringing printouts from Jambo Forums to the floor for discussion.
Those who were part of the platform, whenever they posted something, they used to print them and take them to the public and say, like, I saw this online. So in 2007, several members of parliament who were part of that kind of movement, it was an online movement anyway, printed that central bank scandal and took it to the parliament. And one of the members of parliament called Dr. Sla, he came out in the parliament. And when he wanted to read that in the parliament, the speaker said, this cannot be used because it came from the online sources, which cannot be trusted.
But this didn't deter Max or the Jambo Forum subscribers. And soon after breaking the central bank scandal, Jambo broke another story. Now this one was known as the Richmond Development Scandal, and it's the story Jambo is most known for, and it really brought them a lot of attention, so I want to take some more time to dive into it. In early 2006, Tanzania endured a severe drought that caused the water levels and the dams to drop significantly. This, in turn, led to power outages across the country. In order to address the issue, a Houston, Texas-based company named Richmond Development LLC was awarded a contract to supply emergency power in the form of generators. The contract was worth over $120 million, but there was a big problem. Richmond was essentially a shell company without any power generation experience. They were unable to finance the procurement or transport the number of generators that they promised. And the ones that did arrive didn't even work properly. So Tanzanians never received the much needed emergency power during the drought. But Richmond kept getting paid, bringing in over $100,000 a day. And then in 2006, around November, the Prime Minister, Mr. Edward Lowassa, pressured the government to ignore the advice of TANESCO, Tanzania's state-run emergency company, and they extended Richmond's contract. Now, Richmond then transferred the contract to Dewan's Holdings, an entity based out of the United Arab Emirates whose Tanzanian subsidiary is represented by a Mr. Rostam Aziz, who is a close friend and political ally of Prime Minister Lowassa. So just to recap here, because this can be a little bit confusing, especially when you're hearing it for the first time. In 2006, Tanzania awarded Richmond, a company that had no experience in power generation, a huge emergency power contract. Richmond didn't deliver, but they kept getting paid. Then the Prime Minister pressured the government to ignore the advice of TANESCO and extended the contract. And then the contract was almost immediately sold to a company in which the Prime Minister's friend and political ally had a substantial financial interest. The public was outraged throughout this entire ordeal, but an initial investigation by Tanzania's Prevention and Combating of Corruptions Bureau, or the PCCB, closed after only 5 months, stating that no wrongdoing had been found. However, Max and Jambo forums, fueled by the public's demand for answers, continued to look into the situation, and they had a contact.
There was a whistleblower in Wesley Richmond's office. You know, the good thing about these whistleblowers is that they are almost everywhere. So there was a lady who was working with this kind of company who could get access to lots of documents. And most of them were original documents which were post-buried on Tujami forums. And people came to the platform to get more information on it. And we used to scan them and post them.
And like the central bank scandal, once these documents were posted on Jambo forums, members of parliament started to take notice, even though they were initially met with the same resistance.
The Richmond scandal,
yeah.
It's also over $100 million. It also gained popularity in the country, but when it went to the parliament again, they said this came from the online sources and no one can trust those online sources.
Still, the documents that Jambo published, which implicated Prime Minister Lowassa, proved to be too much for the government to ignore. Another investigation was opened up into the Richmond deal, and it concluded that the Prime Minister acted inappropriately to secure the contract, that all senior officials implicated should resign, and that the PCCB improperly whitewashed its Richmond probe. The fallout for the government was huge.
What made it very popular is that the former Prime Minister, Mr. Edward Lowassa, was a popular guy, very popular because he was almost becoming a president in 2005. And it was the first corruption scandal to force the resignation of the Prime Minister, and then the cabinet was dissolved. And that was the first corruption scandal from the media to take down the government.
With these two scandals, Jambo Forums was becoming a hot topic in Tanzania, and members of parliament were using the discussion boards on Jambo Forums to launch even more investigations.
Corruption scandals became popular in the parliament, and they were discussed. And most of the evidence which were used by the parliamentary committees came from Jambo Forums, and all of them had this watermark written Jambo Forums.
And while the effect that Jambo Forums was having on governance in Tanzania was big, the repercussions for Max and Jambo Forums would arguably prove to be even greater.
They wanted to know who owns that platform called the Jambo Forums. And that's when I started running into a hide since 2007. Of course, a couple of people were arrested, alleged to be the owners, but at the end of the day, they got released. So the government kept pushing to know who is behind the Jambo Forums platform. So in 2008, February, I got arrested and I was alleged to be a terrorist.
You heard that right. In 2008, Max was arrested by Tanzanian authorities and they alleged that he was a terrorist. They held him in jail for 6 days before releasing him without any formal charges. And this was a turning point for Max. As I mentioned earlier, Max was fond of anonymity, and up until this point, his involvement with Jambo Forums wasn't really known. But now his name was attached to the website, and that website was about to face some serious problems. The first big issue that Jambo Forums faced was a copyright claim. As we've mentioned, Max's website is currently called Jami Forums. And that's because in 2008, the word Jambo was mysteriously subject to a copyright claim. A copyright owned by the Tanzanian government.
We got a complaint from the US that someone is claiming that the word Jambo belongs to the government, so we need to change the word from Jambo to something else. In 2000 May, we changed the name to Jami Forums. We had to redirect the traffic from Jambo Forums to Jami Forums. We didn't want to have this kind of fight, but we had to tell GoDaddy, which was the registrar of the domain, that we own the platform, the name Jambo Forums, and we had to make sure that we submit all the documents on who registered it and why we registered it and such information. And 3 months later, we got the name back, but it was too late because we already changed the name.
Luckily, they were able to redirect the traffic and in 2009 began picking up some steam. The popularity of the website was increasing daily and numerous corruption scandals were being covered by the website, and the government for its part was handling these scandals.
There have been a number of corruption scandals posted on Jambo forums. Lots of stories whistleblown on the platform, which the authorities have taken care of.
This was partly because of some turnover in the government, as members of the Jami community were taking positions in public office.
And most of our members who were part of the movement back then are nowadays in the government. Most of them are officials, their secretaries, the ministers, the members of parliament. And I may say that over 60% of the members of parliament are members of Jambo forums or Jami forums, the current Jami forums. Not less than 10 ministers are members of Jami forums. So we have people who are within the government.
But this period of cooperation between the government and Jami was short-lived.
Those people who used to be with you, once they're in power, they want to also push you back so that if they have their own issues, you don't whistleblow them.
You see, in Tanzania and in many other countries, political power provides an opportunity to amass wealth by engaging in corruption. So these people who were on the outside railing against the corruption in the government and exposing or sharing scandals, their position is now flipped. And instead of being incentivized to fight corruption, they can now profit from it. But Jami is making that difficult. Now the old guard politicians had also grown tired of Jami. In 2010, the president had a steep drop in his approval rating.
President Kikwete got into power in 2005 with approval of about 81%. But in 2010, he lost 21% of his popularity. And the ruling party in Tanzania claimed that Jami Forums was behind that decline in popularity. And they said they would put the youth in the platform to make sure that they counter any arguments on the platform.
The statement from Cha Chama Mapinduzi, or CCM, following the 2010 election, had two parts. The first was that Jami Forums was deliberately undermining the government, calling the website anti-CCM and anti-government. President Jakaya Kikwete, who had just won his second term, similarly called Jami Forums an enemy of the state. The second part was that CCM promised to have their youth wing more active on the website in order to counter any opposition. Now, if that's where CCM would have stopped, there probably wouldn't be many complaints. After all, they simply threatened to fight back by engaging in dialogue with those who oppose them. Sure, maybe there are some issues with it bordering on propaganda, but they didn't say they would lie or mislead, they were just gonna fight back. Unfortunately, that's not where CCM stopped. Starting in 2011, the website was targeted by various cyber attacks, and many suspect that the government was behind them. The most common form of attack was direct denial of service, or DDoS attacks. These attacks simply overload a website with traffic, usually through automated means, causing the servers to be overwhelmed and the website to be temporarily shut down. Now, the other more creative way that the website was targeted was through the creation of a clone website. This is pretty much what it sounds like. It involved a website that looked similar to Jami Forums and had a similar web address.
They created a site called Jami Forums without it wasn't Jami Forums, it was Jami. And it had almost the same look like Jami Forums, and it was completely they were trying to make sure that they mislead people into a different platform.
When a user accidentally went to that website, they would enter their username and password, and this would give the government that information, allowing them to access the person's actual Jami account and they hoped to find out who was behind certain posts. But the big move that the government would make wouldn't be done in secret. They looked to change the law. Max had heard some rumblings about this as early as 2014. People were telling him that the government was going to pass a Jami Forums law.
At the same year, in 2014, that's when they said they are coming up with a Jami Forums law. A few days later, they said it's not a Jami Forums law, it's a Cybercrimes Act. So we had to do some kind of advocacy, went to the parliament, we met several parliamentarians. It was 1 year before election 2015. Parliamentarians, especially from the ruling party, kept repeating that they're going to pass that law so that they can use it against us, against Jami Forums.
It was unclear at the time what this law would entail, but Max realized that it would make their operation, and specifically their ability to whistleblow corruption, much more difficult. He spoke with members of parliament about it and warned them of the implications and dangers that a law criminalizing online speech could present to journalists and even to the politicians themselves. He kept requesting a copy of the bill so that he could review it and explain to them any problems.
We got a copy of the bill 24 hours before it was tabled in the parliament. Of course, we still did analyze it and shared our own views. They were not taken into consideration, so it got passed under the certificate of urgency. Within 3 hours, it became a law. There were less than 40 members of parliament in the parliament, and we have about 300 members of parliament, but less than 40. And still it was passed, because it was a must to make sure that it gets passed. And even though we tried to push back, we are going to criminalize the things which were not supposed to be criminalized, it got passed as the way it was presented.
So as Max said, the bill still passed in April 2015, and it's known today as the Cybercrimes Act. In episode 4, I'll get more into the details on it, but it's important to understand just how unpopular this law was, both in Tanzania, as over 60% of parliament was replaced in the next election, and internationally, as websites such as BBC, Slate, Quartz, Vice, Human Rights Watch, Freedom House, and Al Jazeera all ran articles criticizing the law. But the trouble didn't start for Max and Jami right away after the passing of the Cybercrimes Act. At first, it seemed like the government might be more measured than anticipated. However, the election in October of 2015 would change all of that. During the election, Jami was asking people to report any irregularities or problems they had at the polling stations. Jami also had people at the different polling stations post the results as they came in, because many Tanzanians were concerned that the ruling party, CCM, was going to change the results of the election. And again, CCM had essentially been in power since the independence and the unification of Tanzania in 1962, but their popularity was slipping.
People expected that the ruling party could play around with the results. So the mission was, let's post the results and let's start counting ourselves so we don't have to wait for the authorities, because it has been posted on the notepads. When they started posting the results on the platform, we got attacked. It was DDoS attack, layer 7. So we managed to come back after 7 hours, but it was really tough to get back online.
Then almost immediately after the election, the focus on Jami intensified.
Immediately after President Kwete left the office, 2 weeks later, we started getting letters from authorities demanding for user data for our platform. The first letter was about a whistleblower who whistleblew something on the central bank scandal. They wanted to know who was he. They said we were doing this under the Cybercrimes Act. We responded. My lawyers helped me to make sure that we left a letter to respond. But a few days later, 2 weeks later, it was almost after every two weeks getting a letter. So after getting about 13 letters from different offices, from authorities, I felt like it's about time we have to challenge the law.
Max challenged these demands and said they even go beyond what is authorized in the Cybercrimes Act.
Of course, the first letter, they didn't mention which law gives them such power. They said it's under the Cybercrimes Act. But going through the Cybercrimes Act, there is no provision which gives them such power.
So the police simply kept changing their justification or authority for the demands. First, it was the Cybercrimes Act, then the Electronic Communications Act, then the Criminal Procedure Act, then the Whistleblower Act. It didn't matter if the authority even made sense, they just kept asking, and then Max kept refusing, and then trying to explain to the authorities how they were hurting Tanzania.
So we have met the police a couple of times, not only once or twice, trying to tell them, like, these whistleblowers are the good guys, because we have a president whom we think that is the guy who fights corruption. And we thought citizens, as long as they are ready to cooperate, if they see any kind of misconduct, they can help the president. As once you see something, say something. So people were trying to cooperate.
You heard that right. The new president had billed himself as a huge anti-corruption force, and some of that was earned. But here, his police officers were still trying to silence these Jammi users who dared to speak out against the government. So this back and forth went on for just about all of 2016. And during this time, Max was hearing rumblings from whistleblowers he had inside the police stations that they were going to arrest him. And then in December of 2016, he got a phone call.
So I got a phone call from the zonal criminal officer. As long as I knew him, I already knew I had his number. So he said, "Where are you?" I said, I'm far from the city, because I knew that this call might push me to meet him probably immediately. And I wanted to make sure that my lawyer advises me on what to do. So I said, "I'm in Bagamoyo. It's almost 40 kilometers from Dar es Salaam." So he said, "I'm giving you 15 minutes. I want to see you in my office." No, not in my office. You should go somewhere called Nazim Moje, and you'll meet my guys. There is a van. You'll meet them in a van. Once they are done with you, you just go. And like after 10 minutes, he was like, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm still coming, but I was in Bagamoyo, so I'm still I'm almost like 30 minutes to Dar es Salaam." "No, I give you 5 minutes. You should be there." So I had my chief editor, Mr. Simon Mkina, who was in my office. So when he made the third call, he was around, and there is a lady at my office called Asha. So when he made that third call, I already knew that it was now becoming serious. So I put him on loudspeaker, and he said, "Max, you know what? We can do anything against you. People will... they'll be shouting, there'll be a lot of public outcry, and take 6 months, 1 year, and we'll be gone. So you go and meet my guys." And even Mr. Simon Mkina was worried, like, "No, we should not go there. This is not safe."
So after this third call, after the police chief told him, "Sure, people might get upset if we come get you, if we arrest you, if something bad happens to you, but they'll get over it." After that phone call, Max reaches out to his contact in the police station.
We got a whistleblower within the police who said, "Max should not go there, he might be abducted. And if possible, come straight to his office, because he's in his office." So we went straight to his office with a lawyer. And once we reached there, I made a call, like, "Sir, I'm here." I said, "Okay, you will just meet my guys." I said, "No, I'm at your office." The next thing was, "You're under arrest." That's how I got arrested.
This was the fifth time that Max had been arrested, but it would be the first time he was ever charged with a crime. And that might have been what led to the public outcry that it caused. I mentioned before that the news outlets that ran the story when the Cybercrimes Act was passed, and those same news outlets were running stories now about Max's arrest. And the whole result of this is that Max now finds himself front and center in this battle with the government over media censorship. After fighting against corruption for 14 years and creating Tanzania's most highly trafficked social media website, after breaking scandals on that website that cost Tanzania millions of dollars, and after enduring threats, arrests, interrogations, and abductions, Max has found himself fighting on another front, trying to fend off another threat to the people of Tanzania, but this time he's become the target himself.
You know, once the have a personal focus, they focus onto that person. I think I became a target, and then they already know that it's Max. So everything is about Max, Max, Max.
Now, this was never really what Max wanted. If you talk to him, he won't focus on his own struggles. He doesn't like to talk about the threats against his life or the long nights he spent in jail cells. He won't even focus on the criminal cases being brought against him. He is always concerned with Tanzania, with the people of his home country who he thinks deserve better than what they are getting, and with his team's effort to bring them something better. But as much as Max doesn't like to focus on his own struggles, I think that his story might be an important part of his overall effort. Because it's captivating. It shows how much difference one person can make. And he'll be the first to acknowledge that he hasn't done this alone. And that's true. Asha Abanala, who I mentioned was the first person I contacted at Jamii and is their current director, has been a vital part of Jamii Forums for the past 8 years. And co-founder Mike Mushi, who I've also mentioned before, was arrested himself back in 2008. And the entire Jamii team, from the reporters to the engineers, the quality control personnel, the editors, the lawyers, the donors, the advertisers, the users even, they have all contributed and they all deserve recognition. And their story, Jamii's story, along with Max's, deserves to be heard. Now, these stories didn't end in 2016. Max was ultimately charged with 3 crimes stemming from that December arrest. 2 were for refusing to divulge user data information from Jamii forums. The police, as mentioned before, wanted the names of individuals who were criticizing the government. Now, the other charge was for refusing to register his website with the government. Essentially, Max has a .com website instead of a .tz website. He wasn't initially given bail and spent 3 nights in jail. He needed permission to travel outside of the city. He complied with this, but the government kept pushing.
In 2018, August, government officials from the Director of Public Prosecution say that I've been traveling a lot. And they said this is too much. Max is traveling out of Dar es Salaam. He's traveling out of Tanzania frequently. Of course, I was asking for permission. I wrote a lot of letters to the, whenever I had stakeholders meetings out of Tanzania, whenever I had stakeholders meetings out of Dar es Salaam, seeking for permission to travel. They says it's too much. I should be stopped from traveling. So my passport has been taken by authorities and I'm not allowed to travel out of Dar es Salaam until the cases are over.
For December 2016 charges, one of which he has already beaten, Max still, in 2019, cannot travel outside of Dar es Salaam. And the letters, the demands for user data, keep coming.
I don't see this ending, because even though we are still in court, they kept coming with new letters demanding for user data.
That's not the only button that the government knows how to push, though. They've enacted new regulations that require websites and even internet cafes to collect data and give it to the government when asked. They've instituted a $900 fee for social media websites, blogs, and even YouTube channels. And violating these regulations don't result in civil punishments. Bloggers, YouTubers, and journalists have been arrested under these regulations. And Jamii even had to go offline in June of 2018 because of the regulations. Max was given 12 hours to comply with certain demands and saw that his users and team could be arrested if they didn't. But he also didn't want to give in.
It felt like, no, this is not supposed to be a crime. So there's a lot of sections that refer to, no. If we comply, we already know that this is not a good law. If we comply, people might think like these guys are okay with the law. So I personally said no. I spoke to my team and I said, guys, we better shut down the service and not operate until authorities listen to us. So we are trying to push back and tell them, like, this is not the right practice.
So he took the website down for a month while they could formulate the legal challenge. Max took some heat for this. People thought he was giving in to the government's demands. But Jamii Forums is back up, and these legal battles continue to rage on. Now, I know this is a lot of information, and some of it might not be super clear. I'll talk details about these laws and regulations, along with how they apply to Max and Jamii in episode 4, but I wanted to make sure you knew the current state of Jamii and how this is all continuing to play out, because it's certainly not over. And before I end this episode, which is the episode I was the most excited to do and really what inspired this whole thing, because It's the first thing I heard, Max's story, Jami's story. So I felt like in doing this, I'm taking you on kind of the same route I've had. And I'm hoping maybe some people are as moved by this as I was. But again, before I end this episode, I want to just acknowledge the admiration that I have for Max. When I talked to him, he mentioned how tired he was, how frustrating it is to try to engage with people, to try to get people to listen and do the right thing, and then to have them just push you down time and time again, relentlessly, with everything they have. Some people who supported him, who he thought he could trust, have turned. They've become self-interested. And as he said, they're trying to push him back. I can't imagine what that must feel like every day. I can't imagine the strength that it takes for Max and Mike and the whole Jami Forums team to keep fighting. But I thank them for letting me into their world a little and letting me share this story. And thank you all again for tuning in. This isn't the end. The next episode, I'll be getting into more of the corruption issues that have hampered Tanzania and really spurred Max's journey. And until then, I encourage you to check out Jami Forums and share this podcast with whoever you think might be interested. Have a good one, and I'll be back in a few weeks with episode 3.